This is Right On, a series of conversations with Minnesota authors, historians, poets, and filmmakers, supported by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we feature former Thief River Falls native Catherine Dahlstrom. Catherine Dahlstrom is the author of 6 books in the Good News Club series and has had 2 of her screenplays optioned by film companies. She recently released her latest book, Children of Angels. The following was recorded at the Thief River Falls Public Library on September 10th, 2012. It's author Catherine Dahlstrom on this edition of Right On.
It takes about 4 years to learn how to write a novel, and you really need to study intently other writers, good writing, bad writing, everything that you can to learn the craft, as well as there are so many how to write books out there. Any of you who are interested in writing probably already know Writer's Digest books, for example. Not only do they publish the Writer's Digest magazine, but they have an entire line of books so that you can learn how not just to write a novel, but how to write a cozy mystery, how to write a detective novel, how to write horror, how to write a pioneer story, how to write mainstream fiction. Anything that you want to learn, there is a book out there that will help you. But I didn't just stick with book learning. I also learned from other writers. I had 2 mentors who had been published for years and years, and they taught me so much by reading my writing and helping me to know what was lousy and helping me to know what was good, and I was able to learn from their writing as well. I launched into a writing group where I began to critique other writers and help them along on the journey. I also began to write articles and short stories for magazines so that I could establish a bio, so that I could say I have been published somewhere. The very first article published was enough to make me turn cartwheels, and those of you who have had anything published, even in a magazine, you know how exciting that is. The first one out is staggering. You can hardly believe it. You buy 5 copies for your mom, and you do all those things. Out in Los Angeles also, I was working with inner-city children. Remember, I'd been a teacher, and I did that for 7 years, so I took that teaching experience to the inner city and began to work with a ministry called Child Evangelism Fellowship. They bring Sunday school type of material to kids, especially in the inner city. So I would pack up my visual aids and my snacks and my guitar, and I would head to Jordan Downs Housing Project in Watts, Los Angeles. And as I worked with those kids, at the same time, I was attending more writing seminars, and I was starting to hear editors at major publishing houses say, "Someone give us stories with non-white kids as the main characters, because there aren't very many out there. And if you can even set them in the inner city, you'll be guaranteed to be published." Because I was beginning to see that if you don't have a concept that is new and fresh and something that the publishing industry wants, you don't have as much of a chance of getting published. So, in fright, I prayed really hard, going, how is a northern Minnesota teacher supposed to write something that inner city children can relate to? But God gives us many gifts, and one of them that I have is being able to pick up dialects. And so, through my ministry and other women who were doing the same kind of Good News Club things that I was doing in the inner city, I began to listen hard and learn, for example, African-American dialect and Hispanic dialect, and I would take along a recorder, and I would listen, and I would take notes, so that I developed an ear to be able to write believable dialogue from the kids in my stories, and they are composites of the kids that I worked with. That first series was called The Good News Club. That was published in the 1990s. It had a wonderful, solid 5-year run with Child Evangelism Fellowship Press, still available through used booksellers on Amazon.com, I'm thrilled to be able to say. Children of Angels is actually my greatest love. I wrote these inner city stories because the need was there, and I knew I would have a chance at getting published because no one else was writing inner city stories. But my real love has always been fantasy. Pat Dunning will know that. Sitting here in the audience, she's known me from the time I was a child and what a daydreamer I've always been and how much I've always loved anything to do with fantasy and science fiction, as long as it wasn't too dark. So I've been a huge fan of The Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. I can name many other series like that that I've adored. Another dream I had is to be able to turn my books into film. And I knew that if I was was going to do that, I would have to learn how to write screenplays. And that is a whole different genre. I told you it takes a good 4 years of intensive study to learn how to write a novel well. It takes about that amount of time to learn how to write a screenplay because it's a completely different way of writing. You can't deal in thoughts. You can't describe thoughts. You can only show through a character's actions and through setting and through what's going on, what and what choices that character makes, what is in the head of your main character. So I went ahead and learned that as well through a very intensive online course called the Pro Series Alumni, offered through an online screenwriting complete set of classes called Screenwriting U. It's headed up by producer Hal Crosman, who's considered one of the best screenwriters in Hollywood. Through learning with him at the beginning of this course, one of his requirements was, I want you to find a concept that has potential to be a blockbuster. And as I was joking with Mark this morning on the radio, Steven Spielberg wishes he could do that all the time. Coming up with a concept that would draw people into a theater that they would want to pay money for is not easy. But once again, I prayed really hard. Knowing my love of fantasy, I began to ponder, what is a concept that I could do? I wanted to deal with angel powers. You know how popular the Harry Potter series has been and how wonderfully fun they are. And again, the Chronicles of Narnia. I know that Harry Potter can be a little controversial for some people in the inspirational realm, and I understand that. I've come to really appreciate at least the good things that J.K. Rowling did in terms of plot and how she managed to carry out a plot through 7 books. So through a study of her and seeing how popular that was, I wanted to do something still that was different. How many of you want to see anything more about vampires? I've actually spoken to Hollywood producers who've said, if I have to read one more vampire script, I'm going to throw myself out a window. I didn't want vampires. I didn't want witchcraft. Even though Rowling's isn't, you know, way deep, dark, occultish, it's still something that I didn't want to be dealing with. I wanted to go with something new again, something fresh. So I latched onto angels. They're a hot topic right now anyway. But I'm asking myself, how can my main character have angel powers and still be a human? And that's when the Lord gave me this very obvious answer with one word. And those of you who have been to church with me are going to know the answer right away. The Nephilim, those strange beings that were born of angels and women back in the days before Noah. There are 3 verses of them in Genesis 6. 2 little verses that say that in the days before, you know, or in these days, angels took women for wives. Their children became the Nephilim, and the Bible describes them as heroes of old, men of renown, sorry about that. And then in Numbers 13, they are very scary people that the people of Israel don't want to have to fight when they're coming back home to their land because they're giants. And I would think that if you had some angel genes in you, you'd be rather a largish person. There are historians who also say that Goliath, who King David had to fight before he became king, may have been a Nephilim. My whole thing with this book is, I don't know if they were evil, I don't know if they were good, I have no idea if they had angel powers, but what I'm playing with is, it's the fantasy make-believe premise, what if the DNA of the Nephilim showed up in a kid who's 13 years old and he suddenly develops angel powers? And he has to wrap his head around, why is this happening? Why can I suddenly fly? Why am I strong enough to lift the back end of a car? Why am I being attacked by demons in my school hallways? Demons don't like angels at all, so anything angelic, they're going to attack at the drop of a hat. So this kid not only has to deal with human bullies, but these spirit bullies. He meets his own guardian angel, who is named Aziel, and becomes as close as a brother to him. He has to go from being a 13-year-old picked on school loser to a battle leader of angels, what God has called him to be. And is it an easy process for him? No, not at all. And that's one of the things that I want readers to be able to enjoy in the story, is the tough journey that Jeremy has to go through. I've had so much fun writing it. It will continue. This is book 1 of the series. And as I said, now you know how I came about with the idea. It was through this class. I wrote this as a screenplay first. Hal Crosman has been willing to endorse it and has actually graced me enough to say that he believes this could be a hit, which thrills me to the toenails, I can't even tell you. And then I have Christian friends in the faith-based film realm. Hollywood's Christian film market is growing by leaps and bounds. Some of you have probably enjoyed some of the great things they've been coming out with. The Blind Side is the best. You know, we have an Oscar-winning actress. Sandra Bullock won the Oscar for that film. And it was written by producers and screenwriters in the faith-based film realm. And I have a dear friend who is in that realm. He's a producer and screenwriter also. He's working on a project right now, a family fantasy that I'm not allowed to name. Hollywood is really strange about this. Until a project has hired all its actors, brought in all of its stars, and signed all the final contracts, they don't want you saying anything about the project. Nope, nope, nope. It's got to be totally silent. Then as soon as whatever A-list actor, an A-list actor is a major star, if they can sign on someone like that, then all of a sudden it's Variety and broadcast all over the place and headlines and billboards and all that kind of. It's at the stage where I'm not allowed to tell you yet what the name of this family fantasy is. Hopefully it will start filming in October. I've adapted that film into a novel as well for the same age group. Hopefully that will be turned into a novel as well. But when my producer friend, his name is Mark Kramer, finishes with that project, he wants to start looking at Children of Angels. So does this mean that it's guaranteed that this will become a movie? You have no idea how many steps are involved. And the toughest part is, who's got $12 million lying around that they can invest in my movie? Anyone? Any hands? I am a film producer also, but it sounds so fancy. Ooh, you're a producer. What it really means is I'm a fundraiser. And if I could do bake sales, I would, if it wasn't so many cookies, you know. But whatever we have to do, you know, to get our work, to find investors and that kind of thing, we'll do. It's a fun read. I really tried to put as much action and drama and humor into it as I could, based on the great masters that I've read. As I said, C.S. Lewis is one of my great heroes, so is Tolkien. And if any of you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to field them from you.
When you're writing your books, let's say you write this one, do you have like an outline in your head of, okay, where this the first book is going to be getting, and then the last book is going to be ending? Do you already have that somewhat played out?
Yes, outlining is my way of keeping sane. Some writers like to go with, and we were talking about this morning on the radio as well, some writers are comfortable with letting your mind go wherever it will, and just, you know, and sometimes when you're in the middle of a story, you do need to let the story go where it is naturally going, especially if you can find a tremendous twist that happens as you're living the story while writing it. But for the most part, at least, I have to have a roadmap of where to go. If I didn't, I would be absolutely snowed under by all the details coming at me, because I'm at the beginning of the story, I know how it needs to end. All that stuff in the middle can just pile in on you and give you writer's block. You can be staring at the screen frozen because there's too much to deal with, and you're so afraid you'll lose this idea if you don't quickly get to it, but you're stuck at the beginning of the third chapter, and that's going to be happening in chapter 7 somewhere. For me, road mapping, outlining it out, and knowing what is going to be happening. And there again, my great example there was J.K. Rowling. She kept a plot going through 7 books, and there are things in book 1 that are revealed in book 7 that you realize she had this whole thing figured out before she started. That is just a magnificent accomplishment. As I said, in the inspirational realm, Harry Potter can be controversial, and I totally respect that. So again, I work very hard not to have anything resembling the occult in my stories, but still, I learned a lot from the lady. So, good question. Thanks. Anyone else? Yes.
Where do you get the ideas for your books?
Again, a whole lot of prayer and trying to be logical. Hal Crosman, in his class at the beginning of his course, teaches you how to find a brilliant idea, how to create a blockbuster. Hollywood has methods. If you think that any of their big hits have happened just by accident because, boing, a wonderful idea hit them, realize that's not the case. They have ways of creating ideas. They'll bring different themes together and bounce them around. They'll pull disparate topics. What if we, and there are many categories, for example, the fish out of water story. What if we put someone who, okay, here's an example of the comedy romance new in town. What if we took a gal in Florida who was a CEO who loved her little high heels in her wonderful fashions, and who loved jogging on the beaches in Miami, and moved her to New Ulm, Minnesota in the winter, and had her become the head of a manufacturing plant there. You were laughing. That is a very funny and very good concept. I have a friend who was actually in that film. That's an idea of a fish out of water, okay? A Miami gal stuck in New Ulm. They will take all these different techniques, and they'll have meetings, and they'll bounce ideas around and mix and match things until they come up with what they think could be a hit. And then they start doing market studies. Hal taught us these techniques, and that's one of the things that helped me to come up with Children of Angels. It's the idea of, it's the fantasy what if. What if a 13-year-old somehow got the DNA of the Nephilim inside him, and all of a sudden he develops angel powers? He has to solve the mystery, where did the DNA come from? How did this happen to me? Why am I being attacked? What's going on? And then later on in the story, after it's established who he is and why it's happened, and why he and after he and his friends have started to be able to solve the mystery of how they became Nephilim, now they have to deal with the attacks that they're under because, think about it, and this was where producer Hal Crosman was not going to let me off the hook. I wanted to turn Children of Angels into an X-Men style superhero story, and I bounced the idea off him over the phone in a conversation with him, and he just said, "Don't you dare, because that has been done. That would be X-Men. I'm not going to let you get away with that. You tell me what the core of the story is." And here's this guy who is not necessarily a Christian. We're talking the heart of Hollywood here. This is not the faith-based film realm, but mainstream Hollywood. And he's saying to me, "All right, Jesus knew his core, right? Jesus knew exactly what he was about." And I said, "Yes, indeed he did." "Then you tell me his core." And I said, "To save mankind." And he said, "All right, now, you tell me what the core of your story is." And I said, I'd been a little afraid of the idea, but I blurted this out. "A young teen shocked to learn that he's part angel must battle human and demonic forces out to destroy him for proving that God is real." And he said, "That's the story, and that's what could be a hit, because no one's done anything like this." Because think about it. If you can prove that you are part angel, you've proved that angels are real. If angels are real, heaven is real. If heaven is real, God is real. Do you realize that there are going to be forces on this earth who don't like that? And that sets up the battle line. And I'm glad to welcome my sister-in-law, Jossie Dahlstrom, and my niece, Leah Dahlstrom. Delighted to see family. I'm so sad. Every other family member is either out of town, working, or fishing right now. Larry, why are you up at Lake of the Woods? Anyway, or like I said, they're having to work, so God bless them. So you guys, thanks so much for coming. My own daughter is hoping she can be here too, but she had to work until late, so I'm hoping she'll be able to straggle on in here. But like I said, I understand work hours too. So any more questions?
Can you talk about the challenges of marketing a book?
We had a running joke going this morning, and I'm going to keep this going. Do you know how hard it is to sell a book in Thief River Falls, Minnesota? There is one bookstore, and they are willing to take the book. I'll be putting it into Northern Lights. I'll actually be talking to the owner of Northern Lights tomorrow to put copies there. Other than that, I have been running around to store after store, and everybody, Kmart, I knew this about Walmart already, okay? Kmart's the same way. Super One grocery store is the same way. When I talk to the managers, they tell me that locally they would love to put in a local author's books on their little old revolving book racks that you see by the bread or wherever they keep those things. But corporate headquarters has to okay it first. And corporate headquarters isn't going to be interested until you have a sales track record, at least at Walmart. So what I was talking to Mark about this morning on our morning show is, could I get you guys to start a harass Walmart campaign for me so that we can get this? You know, if enough people ask corporate headquarters for a book, they'll go, "I guess maybe we'll make some money here." So, but I have to, I'm. It's not just Walmart. It's Kmart. It's I didn't stop at Cenex, you know. But yeah, you never know. You know, Cenex, they, you know, some dad wants to get his Christmas shopping done while he's getting his tires changed, you know, something like that, you know.
Candy store?
I will. Give me the name of it. Where is it?
Electric, isn't it? Electric Candy Store. It's right next to the Elks.
Okay.
The Curiosity
Oh, yes. They unfortunately, she says that books never sell there. I was in and talking to her. Do you know that, the Curiosity Shop, the building was built by my parents, Roy and Dorothy Shetler, when they had Shetler's Hatchery. So when you go into the Curiosity Shop and you see the rust-painted floor, they left it rustic. It's got all these wonderful little scrapes and marks and things. I helped paint that floor, and I recognized those cracks. I walked in and went, I haven't seen that thing since 1978. Anyway, so it's so much fun to go in there and also to crack up the ladies where the potpourri is and some of the gift areas. I was telling the clerks, yeah, that's where we used to scrub the turkey pans, you know, when they were hatching the chicks. And then the brooder room was over where I think they've got fabric being sold over there right now. So what a huge change. My mom had such a great time walking in there and being able to tell them, we built this. And then I'm also going to be checking out that store on, I think it's Atlantic Avenue. Is it River City Gifts? Hopefully they'll be carrying the book as well. So, but I know for sure that Northern Lights will. And marketing nationwide, thankfully my publishing house, Wine Press, is really, really good at this. And they've been a great help. But I've had to learn how to use the internet, set up Facebook page, set up a website. I have a local producer friend who did a book video. In fact, would you do me the goodness of going onto YouTube, typing Children of Angels in my name, and watching the 61-second book trailer video that he made for this? We need as many likes as we can get. And some of you are going, don't make me get on the computer, are you mine? Unfortunately, a modern-day author must not just be fluent with everything that's going on in the internet, but be able to use it. And the other way of marketing is doing just this. Speaking as much as I can. I'm going to be speaking to youth groups, and I've already done this already, and speaking to schools and things like that. For those appearances, I have a 35-inch stainless steel and silver sword that is actually the sword on the cover of the book. The artist was gracious enough to take a photo of my sword and put it on the cover. I didn't particularly want to bring it into the library because I was wondering if I could possibly get arrested for this, but it's completely dull and harmless. But when I do appearances at churches and things, and if you want to impress a teenager, whip out a sword like that and hold it up. And yeah, absolutely. So again, am I marketing? Yeah, I'm going out of my mind doing it. So
does the publisher do e-books?
Oh, yes. It's available as an ebook. It's available for any of the Nook and other handheld electronic book formats. So I'm really excited about that. It has potential, as I said, for film, but I'll keep you posted on that one. So more questions. And how long was I supposed to go, Darcy?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for asking, because when you do, then they'll bring it in. So thank you, Mr. Goldberg. You need to get a better price from me, right? So it retails for $13.99, but from me, it's straight $12. I don't deal in pennies and tax and things like that when I'm doing straight on sales. And you don't have to pay shipping and handling. My publishing house also has its own bookstore online, winepressbooks.com, and it's available through amazon.com. They've done a great job of making sure it's going to be available to everyone. And the way that it will get into big bookstores like the Barnes & Nobles in Fargo is people will come in and ask for it. The bookstore owner will decide it's worth their while, and my publishing house has made sure that it's available through the big bookstore distributors like Ingram and Spring Arbor, and there are many other companies that are kind of middlemen. They keep these books on hand. They buy them themselves and then distribute them out to bookstores. I have the fun of this book is actually subsidy published. That means that this is good news for those of you who want to get published. It's great hope for us now in the trends that are changing in the publishing realm. I paid for these books. Wine Press is behind it all the way. They've got all the clout, all the respect, all this thing could become it's eligible to become a New York Times bestseller. Anyway, it wouldn't be banned because of being a self-published book, because Wine Press has such a great reputation. But again, this is hope for those of you who want to get published and think, how can I break into one of the big houses? And it's not easy. I even had a literary agent, and it's still because my name is not known yet. And in this difficult market, they want a book published by Amy Grant or anybody whose last name is Clinton. But Dahlstrom? Who's Dahlstrom, you know?
You do your own illustration?
No one would buy it if I did my own art. This was created by Christopher Miller, who has his own. He and his brother have their own tween fantasy book series called The Miller Brothers, and you can go ahead and look it up. They are bestsellers in their own right, and I'm glad that he was willing to do this. Of course, Wine Press paid him, you know, through me paying Wine Press, but he's been worth every penny because I love his work. It's I love that cover. So, yes, good.
So can you talk a little bit about how you, about this published convention, that you had a literary agent?
Yes. No, my literary agent has been my good friend and representative for years and years and years. He became very interested in my work through my Good News Club series back in the 90s. That series sold about 50,000 books, so I was really excited that it was able to do that well. And through, again, one of the writers' conferences I attended, I met an author who I became friends with, and she said, I'll be happy to recommend you to my agent, Les. And I sent my work to him, and he was perfectly happy to enter into a contract right there. He is going to be representing this other novel that I told you about the project that has to be hush-hush at the moment. As soon as an A-list actor is hired, I'd love to be able to tell you who, but I don't dare. He's such a huge star that I absolutely would, if I should have the chance to hear my words being spoken by this guy, I think I'd just about pass out cold. But anyway, he's one of many that they're approaching, but there is one actor they have in particular for our comedy bad guy. I've written that book already, and Les is waiting on the sidelines, anxious. As soon as the contracts are finalized and the film starts to be produced, then he's going to be presenting it to big publishers who are looking for books that are actually attached to films in production. So here's hoping that one takes off as well. That's another lesson for those of you who have a dream of writing. You can't just rely on one project. You have to have many irons in the fire out there ready to get hot. So,
do you have a particular method behind your writing? You know, I've heard some authors say that they set aside certain amounts of time every day, or have a place that they have to go to write. Do you have any of those things?
Nope. My life is a bit crazy right now because my dear mother, 88 years old, who lives with us, had to have open heart surgery. And she survived it with flying colors. It's amazing because she's in the hospital so much. So basically, I grab writing time when I possibly can. So my method is to snatch at it every moment that I get. And if it means sitting in a waiting room in the hospital, I'll have pencils and an eraser and a notebook, and I'll write by hand. I can't stand to write with a pen because I'm editing as I go, and so I'll scrawl out so many things that pretty soon I can't read a word. So I've learned to write with a pencil when I have to handwrite. Everybody's going, why don't you carry a laptop or a tablet? Because I can't stand those little keyboards. So if I'm not able to pound away at home, and I do set aside on a regular weekly basis at least 3 to 5 hours a day of writing, if I possibly can. That's my goal. So, anyway.
Does Wine Press, do they offer like editing help?
Oh, yes. One of the things that sets Wine Press apart, and anyone who does go into the subsidy publishing realm where you are paying them to produce your words for you and turn it into a quality book, one of the burning questions you must ask is, how stringent is your editing? These people put, I went through 8 passes of this book with their copy editing department, where their copy editors were looking just as hard as I was, 8 different passes through it. Correct one thing, we'd go through, we'd check again. At one point, they had me start the manuscript at the end and read backwards from the last sentence to the first, reading each sentence front to back. What that does is it makes you look at each sentence and catch any errors in it because you can't read for story anymore. Reading for story can cause you to start sweeping along and you'll miss errors, but when you are reading from the last sentence to the first sentence, you're out of context. That means you're paying attention to each sentence, and it really, really works for those of you who have to write term papers and want to get them right. Try that. It's amazing. Or those of you who have to write copy for newspaper, things like that. It's one of the many things that they taught me. You've been a wonderful audience, and again, it's wonderful to be back. I know this library so well. I used to study here all the time in high school, and when I was going to Northland Community College, my husband Tim used to work here, one of those teenagers who tidy up the shelves all the time. So thanks. It's been really, really enjoyable, and I appreciate you coming out to see me so much.
You've been listening to Write On, a series of conversations with Minnesota authors, historians, and filmmakers. Write On is supported by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we featured author Catherine Dahlstrom, recorded at the Thief River Falls Public Library. Photos and audio from other Pioneer 90.1 Speaker Series events can be found at RadioNorthland.org.